Hello and welcome to the Echo Chamber podcast. My name is Tony Groves, and today it's just us. And when I say just us, it's us, myself and Martin, and some of our loyal listeners and the people who basically support this podcast, because it wouldn't exist without them. But it's been a busy week, Martin, and we've put out a serious amount of podcasts over the last few weeks, to be honest with you. And the truth of it is, we missed out on a load of stuff this week. And you said, let's try and have a conversation about it.
Yeah, it's been a big week for all round. I mean, we've had some big judgments come out of the European courts, and then we've had government doings and froings, and then we had we had Eamon falling asleep in the Dáil. Tony, can I ask you first? And you're good on this, the tax ruling, the Apple tax ruling. Let's get into that one first.
The Apple tax ruling, as I've said before, said several times, doesn't mean that Ireland is not a tax haven. It simply means that depends on what your definition is. You know, we are very good at tax avoidance, not tax evasion. Our laws are what they are, and if you play by our rules, you can avail of these terrific deals. Like, we have deals like, you know, research and development will cut your corporation tax. The knowledge box will cut your corporation tax. We have all of these laws that other people may call loopholes, and it's, I suppose, the real difference here. What in the judgment is, it's an actual good day for sovereignty, because it means we can actually still dictate what we do on the island of Ireland. It's a good day if you believe the shtick around it, the message it sends to multinational corporations that Ireland will stand up for your interests. It's a good day if you believe that matters to the international bond markets. It's a terrible day if you believe that tax justice is important. The difference between tax evasion and tax avoidance doesn't matter a damn if you are looking at an underfunded hospital or health service in some other country that Ireland is, by using our tax laws, helping an evasion. What they would see as evasion, we call avoidance. And I really thought this was already, I just believed that this was kind of a likely, like, most people didn't think that this was going to be the ruling, but it was kind of on the cards.
It was a very narrow perimeter, and it was whether it was illegal state aid or not. That's what was being questioned. And for me, the way I read it is, no, it wasn't illegal state aid to charge 0.00 whatever it is, 5% on the money moving through Ireland. That was quite all right. That's quite fine. Nothing wrong with that. My problem with that is, that's not what the Irish people have been told for donkey's years. The Irish people have been told that the corporation tax rate is 12%.
Yeah.
And now we find out that it is whatever these multinationals or businesses can get away with in the country. Now, if we had been told when that deal was being done that, look, we've done a deal with Apple, this is what we're going to charge them in tax, it wouldn't have happened. And that's what's wrong, is that we only find out retrospectively that our government decided to act above our heads.
That's not, and hand that out. But that's not even true in a way, because absolutely that they've been able to avail of these funds. But at the same time, they've been paying an effective tax rate of less than 1% up to only a couple of years ago, Martin. So it's not this is while their judgment relates to something historic, there has always been a way around it. So we started off with, you know, we were famous for the double Irish. Like, senators stood up in the US and said, Ireland is robbing, you know, US taxpayers. Then when the double Irish kind of got cracked down on, we came back with the double Irish with a Dutch sandwich, and we were bouncing, you know, we were bouncing funds across. I mean, all of this is none of this is, how do I put it? It's all in the public domain. It's all known. It's common. We know that this is how Ireland does it. The argument is, and here's the argument, and I don't believe it myself, but I'm going to put it forward nonetheless. There's a lot of people agitating, saying Ireland is a tax haven. It's ripping us all off. And I always say to you, Ireland has developed the most sophisticated and best what in the world, Martin?
Tax avoidance system or tax haven.
Now, what do I call them? I call them the Wavin pipes.
The Wavin pipes going through the IFS.
And we are very good at saying we will have this facility and this can all funnel through and we're not going to charge you on it. We're not going to tax you on it. We're going to charge an administration fee. And that's how we're making it through. Now, the argument that has to be had and the dishonesty with the Irish people is the argument around jobs. Okay, so it's actually a fallacy. If you look at the statistics, Ireland gets 10% of the employment numbers for nearly 500% of the profit per head that you would take those same six companies that generate over 50% of our corporation tax rate and drop them in Germany. So Germany gets literally 90% more jobs per head of or per profit that we get. So I don't know if jobs are really at risk. I don't think so. We'd need to have the conversation. And the second conversation we have to have, and it needs to be honest, is that Ireland itself actually stands to lose anyway, because in the grand scheme of things, ourselves and Luxembourg are out there on our own as the two biggest tax havens in the EU. And our neighbors must bloody hate our guts. So
we had spoken to Aidan about this before, Aidan Regan, and Aidan has a great view from the outside looking in rather than from us looking out. And yeah, our neighbours despise what we do. They absolutely despise what we do. It's not team player stuff, and it's really not. But then, as you explained on the other side, we don't have an indigenous industry.
Oh, we do. We just don't focus on it, and we certainly don't give it the we don't invest in it like we do. We like tech companies. We like the glamour. We like this idea that, you know, Ireland is the home to Google and the Google box of this nonsense. And we, you know, so all of that plays into a perception of, you know, the Silicon Docks and this is how we operate. But like, it's just across the road from the Silicon Docks is the IFSE, and the shadow bank industry is like dwarfs the Irish economy, but on a scale of like nearly 100 to 1 of what flows through the IFSE every year. So, and we know from the last global financial crisis when, you know, people said these banks were insolvent, be them Italian banks or German banks, and they were based in the IFSC, their offices. The Irish central bank said, we don't regulate them. That's kind of in the IFSC, and it's kind of la-la land. And that's true. That's what happened. And we haven't improved that yet. And that's, you know, there's a reason why we have, I think the statistic is pre-COVID anyway, that every 14 seconds a plane takes off somewhere in the world and it's financed in Ireland. There's a reason why it's financed in Ireland.
Yeah, there is.
It's not because we're good at buying and selling planes, guys, you know? So
on that now, because you've mentioned, I think we've covered enough of that as much as we can, but there is a link to this and the Max Schrems case, and there is a link between Apple Tax and the Max Schrems case. And the link is, they come here for the tax breaks. They stay for the lax data protection. Mm. And why wouldn't you when you can have the most lax data protection in the whole of Europe? Now, Max started out, and it's a long time ago, and I remember when he first went to the Data Protection Commissioner. But anyway, he brought down Safe Harbor. That's the best way of saying it. The information transfers between here and the US, they just weren't safe. And the US has different rules on data protection. In fact, it has very little rules on data protection, whereas EU citizens have an absolute right to have their data protected. And that was the conflict. And the second case finished last week. And again, it has been proved that the data transfer system that exists between here and the US is not safe for EU citizens. Therefore, they have to now go each SCC, they have to go one by one by one, which means that the Irish Data Protection Commissioner now has a mountain of extra work to do. And that's off the back of being refused the fairly mediocre budget that they had put in for last year. It was gutted. So they don't have the resources.
No, we don't
do all
have
of this work.
We don't have the resources. And you make a good point, because, you know, we can say this because we're Egypt and we put it out there. But, you know, there was an opinion floated that the Data Protection Commissioner knew they were under-resourced, knew they were understaffed, knew that they were underperforming, but got on the wrong side of the government over the PSC card.
And that's not a fallacy, Tony. That's completely true.
And have had their knuckles wrapped in so far as that they didn't even get the resources that they asked for in the last budget. What does the Schrems case mean, though, in terms of, you know, obviously Ireland as a hub between the EU and the US? How screwed are we in terms of are we facing problems legally if we're not putting in place the correct checks?
Well, the obligation is on the Irish DPC because that's where these companies are based. They're based in Ireland. And when you think of the responsibility, it's billions. We are responsible for the data of billions of people going through the likes of Facebook, Twitter, Google, all of these companies. Any one of them or any other country can turn around at any time and say, and they do. I mean, the rest of the European data protection people have said, look, Ireland's way, way behind on all of this. Germany has started levying fines and really substantial fines. It doesn't help that our government has challenged the PSC rulings. That's basically saying, look, we don't respect the Data Protection Commissioner. That's a green flag to every multinational out there to say, well, you know, the Irish government doesn't like them, so why should we? I can just see this huge, huge mountain of work, and there is no resources there to tackle it. And sooner or later, that's going to come to a crunch. I would already say it has come to a crunch with the Facebook ruling. It has. It has shown that the Irish Data Protection Commissioner could not and did not act when Max originally asked. It had to go through all these loops. And still, it hasn't been dealt with. It's still not dealt with. So it's an awful mountain. And I don't know how they're going to get past it.
Not without this problem is too big just for Ireland to solve, Martin. I know the onus is here, but it's too big just for Ireland to solve. They will, much in the same way as we said the Apple tax money actually belongs to Europe. We may say that this problem belongs to Europe and see how we can socialize our issues and nationalize the profits.
That's kind of where you have the parallel with the Apple tax, is that we are a lax regime. We just are it's a laissez-faire when it comes to data protection and taxation. It's completely laissez-faire, whatever you're having yourself, lads.
Hang on one second. I'm just going to see if Fred Logue would join us for a moment. If he'd allow me. Fred, look, it'd be a waste not to have you here, Fred Logue. Guys, can you give us your understanding based on what Martin has just said? Are we barking up the wrong tree here?
It's spot on, to be honest. The striking thing about the Schrems case is that it's absolutely nothing that wasn't already said in the first Schrems case 4 or 5 years ago.
And if we look at it on that point of view, are we in a worse position now 5 years later in Ireland to deal with this? Or are we still struggling with, are we actually now, do we have a better understanding?
So I think we've wasted 4 or 5 years in actually putting in place proper solutions.
Yeah, Fred, your mic is gone. But yes, Fred, it definitely wasted 4 or 5 years waiting to put in proper solutions. And there's nobody jumping forward to do it now.
Well, now there's no choice.
Yeah.
And the Schrems decision is very strong on what the Data Protection Commission and similar authorities have to do. They can't cherry pigeons. They have to, required, it says, to enforce the GDPR with full diligence. So the court is saying, over to you, Data Protection Commissioners. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's your job.
Which they don't have the resources to do, which, you know, we know that from, we've seen, like, I mean, even in financial services, the Data Protection Commissioner is overwhelmed with complaints about things that go askew when it comes to basically retail banking, you know?
Yeah, in the same section, it also says it's over to you, courts, to give a remedy if the Data Protection Commissioner doesn't act. So every every part of the state, the court system, the political system, and the regulators have a part to play. So it'll be interesting to see how that pans out now in the months and years to come.
And it's that our DPC isn't actually structured to be a sheriff of big tech. It's structured more to be a crying shoulder for big tech. There isn't a huge, shall we say, go get them kind of attitude. That's not what it was designed to be. And it could well do with it.
I think we'll Fred, this is what you get for not living in Dublin city centre, you know. This is the shady Wi-Fi.
It's cushy Wi-Fi. My apologies.
we're gonna do a patron shout out to see if we can generate a decent fob for Fred, you know.
But let me just say on the Max Schrems issue, there are a few people who you definitely need to follow, and generally for GDPR in general, and it's only going to get bigger. Fred Logue, of course, is one. ICCL, DRI, and our old friend Simon McGarr. If you start with those four, you'll get a pretty good knowledge of what it's all about. Look at their timelines and look what they're saying. It's really, really good stuff, and it's important to all of us. So yeah, keep a good eye on it. It's only going to move us on a little.
Let's talk politics
let's talk politics.
It's been disaster, hasn't it? It's been an absolute disaster.
Okay, Senior Hurlan, gotta be the adults in the room. Don't mind the populists. Jump in there, get the job done. This is a job for big boys. Pull on your big boy pants. And then it gets formed, and for 3 weeks we have a creche of spoiled, entitled, overindulged, overpaid, and apparently exhausted from picking out how many advisors you're going to have. And it's quite all right to fall asleep and you're getting paid on the taxpayer's dime after 3 weeks in the job. Tony, I have never, ever, ever been in a job where if you fell asleep, particularly after 3 weeks, your arse would be lifted outside the door. You have no, the WRC is going to laugh you out of it. Laugh you out of it. It's a disrespect. It's a greedy, two-handed, utterly disrespectful of the electorate. They are feathering their nests and we're watching them doing it. And then when they make mistakes, it's like, oh, ha ha, could happen to a saint. No, it bloody well couldn't.
Well, I was furious about the particular, the Eamon Ryan thing 2 nights ago. I was really annoyed about it. I'm less annoyed about it now, but what bothers me, I suppose, is obviously, you know, the Greens benefited massively from vote left, transfer left. Okay. The Greens benefited also to another degree from the people who go, I'm going to punish Fine Gael by voting Green. Okay. So there's two, that's the two camps here. And when you look at that, then you also have to look at the leader and say, well, which camp does he fit in? And then the people who are apologizing for him tend to be the Fine Gael, voter, so the centre right, the right wing voter,
the extreme centre.
Yeah, the radical centre, as they like to refer to themselves. But I do think, like, I mean, I don't envy the Greens sitting down now to having to vote for the change of leader, because they've entered a programme to government and they are actually committed to it. Now, whether you, like, Eamon shouldn't have fallen asleep. The optics were terrible. €90 an hour, he's asleep and he's earning €90 an hour, and we're essentially talking about, you know, low paid, union representation, low paid workers and all of this sort of stuff. Now, they knew obviously that they were going to vote no against it. Okay. So they obviously knew that was going to be the thing. My concern is the Greens. I've seen Greens publish their document saying that they are actually going to work towards the living wage in the lifetime of this government. And I always, always remember that there's that nonsense in politics. And actually, we're not the first to come up with it, but it's that what a minister wants is to have their name on the bill. You know, so they could go away and reproduce the same bill again as the Sock Dems did, but they want to have their name on it to get the credit for it. And that doesn't help anyone. You know, to say that this sort of stuff, and I hate talking about it, but one of the aspects that's thrown at me all the time and people I talk to when I say, well, you know, that's not good enough, they say to you, don't let the perfect bully the pretty good. And what that means is shut up and accept things a little bit as they are, incrementalism a little bit. And that's the argument here. And the argument here for me doesn't hold water, because I think of Fine Gael actually voting against saving migrants drowning and then coming out on RT the next day saying, we only voted against it because we want a new bill that's actually going to be better and more robust. And this new bill has never materialized.
It's not
unique to the Greens. The Greens have made their bed, they have to lie in it. I do think they have a huge problem now when it comes to their, you know, I think the leadership contest is going to be closer than the Programme for Government vote was. I do genuinely think that that's a lot more 50-50 than the Programme for Government. I always told you they'd vote for it.
I actually think the leadership contest that we haven't heard about within Fianna Fáil is a lot closer, Tony.
No.
Like, if we're going to talk about parties that aren't really being cohesive at the moment, Fianna Fáil, man, oh man, they are in a mess.
Yeah,
absolute mess.
Well, I go back to it, and I think I've said this before, but Noel Rock at the time was a first-time TD and was given the honour, and I'm doing, for people listening, I'm doing the little air quotes, of nominating Enda Kenny something like 17 times before he got, finally they put together the confidence and supply motion. And and every time Noel would step up and he'd do his speech about why Enda should be leader, and then they take the vote, and eventually, you know, he was Taoiseach. Within weeks, Noel Rock was the first one out the front saying, Enda needs to make clear on his departure time frame, and, you know, he's not going to lead us into the next election. So what was that going to be? And obviously, you know, Micheál Martin has, the clock is ticking. He's 2.5 years. So, you know, if you're in a dressing room and in a sports event and you're thinking, I don't like the manager, but he's actually only on a 2-year contract, you might not be pulling your weight, and you might actually just say, well, we have a better chance when the next guy comes in. And I do think Fianna Fáil have gotten off to a terrible start. And I think one of the reasons is that they've looked at it and they've said, this guy ain't here for the long term. Jim O'Callaghan, very early doors, set his flag out to say, I want to be leader. Dara Cleary clearly always has wanted to be leader for a long time now. And then you've got other people who have been running around telling every journalist that listened to them, well, he whispered in my ear that I'd get a spot, I'd get a junior ministry, I'd get this. And they're all feeling slighted. And it's playing out in the most ugliest of pathetic terms.
But that doesn't bode well for governance. If you're not in control of your party, how are you in control of the, never mind the electorate, just the government?
Well, can I come in straight away and say, I think Micheál Martin himself actually has done better than people giving him credit, because he went to Barry County, said, are you going to deal with this way? He said, no, I'm going to take it the legal route. And Micheál Martin went, okay, you're sacked. Now, that was pretty quick.
But why object to a debate within you know, the Dáil or wherever, the conference center, and then within, what was it, 6-8 hours, sack him?
Yeah, well, the inside story on that is that he said to him, look, I'm telling you, this is what I want you to do, and I'm giving you a few hours. And by 2:30 in the afternoon, he went back to him and he said, no, I'm still pursuing, it's a matter for the Garda Ombudsman now. And he went, okay, you go to Garda Ombudsman, I want you out. And that was the end of that. Now, does that mean that wins him anything? But, like, they now have housing and health. That's all they have. Housing and health.
It wins you, we'll say, within government. It wins you points within government. Mm. Within the party, it's not winning you any points whatsoever.
None.
It's just increasing divisions.
I agree. And I think I think he'll go out on his shield if he keeps swinging.
I think he'll be going out on his shield pretty quick, Tony.
If he went out on his shield swinging and was doing the right thing in housing and health, because that's all they have, I wouldn't mind so much. But then we see reports today, again, that they're just adopting Rebuilding Ireland, LDA stuff.
Yes, and we better talk about the stuff that has come up in government. Exactly, the LDA stuff is one. We've seen now that they're flying a kite about repurposing student accommodation for co-living. We have the hospitals are in a terrible state now, talking about prefabs, tents. Now,
haven't given back the privacy of private hospitals.
I know, I haven't given them back. Now, can you picture a tent in the grounds of Beaumont on a cold, miserable, wet December afternoon? You know, these things aren't actually as workable as they're saying they are. They're not. And I heard one guy saying, prefabs aren't what, you know, they're much better now. You can't stick your finger through them. I mean, is that the level? Is that the mark? Is that where we're saying, yeah? And, you know, they're only a temporary measure. The pandemic is until a vaccine is found, the pandemic is a permanent measure, and you have to deal with it as such. You have to deal with it as a permanent measure.
I don't know the real answer to that, and to say I did would be mad. I just listen to the doctors and consultants. I mean, you know, my husband, Dr. Matthew O'Toole, who I love and cherish. He was talking about the fact that, you know, during the height of it, everything he dealt with was COVID related, and yeah. And the build up it was 40%, and then it tapered off, and it's gone back down to nearly 30%, and now he's back up at 80%.
So
it's those people I listen to. It's those people who say, and you know, Anthony O'Connor was one of the only voices screaming when we were saying get rid of the contract for private hospitals, saying, what are we doing? We're building up all of these problems, you know, we're storing up all of these issues. Let's keep the capacity, you know, money be damned. And we saw yesterday a state that could borrow 750 million and be paid to take it. Be paid to take it. I mean, I am going door bank to bank with my mortgage now, saying, anybody want my debt, please?
Well, part of it too, Tony, I'll go back to Anthony. Anthony asked a question on Twitter during the week. He said, who's running the country? Who is really running the country? And there is a difficulty there. Micheál Martin is the Taoiseach, but we have a Taoiseach in waiting who is playing, maybe I would argue, more the part of Taoiseach than the Taoiseach is at the moment. Then you have Simon Coveney, who's like the Taoiseach's Taoiseach in waiting. It looks more like a junta passing along through generals than it does actually look like a democracy. And the question is valid. Who is actually running the country? Jack Chambers went in and slapped the opposition around during the week for saying the committee should start up. I'd have upped and chinned them. I think the sense that you shouldn't have a public accounts committee at this present moment in time is absurd. They're going to go on holidays at the end of next week. Bye-bye till September. That gives us from December last year to September this year, during the worst crisis in living memory, and not a single one of them doing an iota. And the ones who are doing something, and this is it, we have no idea what they're doing, because there's no committees to say, go on, explain to us what you're doing. Where's the money getting spent? Instead, we get, oh, no, look, COVID payment. There's a guy, 350 quid. He's the villain. Go after him. There's companies in the UK coining it off bailouts. And we'd want to know in Ireland, who's coining it? Who's getting the money? Who's responsible for it? What are the plans for the future? And we need a way to hold them to account. And they've literally just said, we refuse to be held to account.
I think you've had a good run of it there, Martin. But what I will say is, I agree that the Public Accounts Committee and these things need to sit. I mean, like Ken Fox talks about it, that, you know, like corruption flourishes in the dark. And that's but I will also say to you what you're saying, there's this people then they're doing nothing. I think there's people that have hit the ground running. There are good initiatives coming. I keep a critical eye of all of it. You know, let's see where the white paper goes towards ending direct provision. Let's see what Dara O'Brien is going to deliver when it comes to social and affordable housing. I don't hold much, you know, I'm worried because I saw they paid 460,000 for a load of units again, as opposed to building for 250,000 and that sort of stuff. That worries me. It's they're red flags, but they're only in the job 3 weeks, as you said. I just think that the public now need to be more vigilant now, because, you know, COVID can't be used to just say, well, you know, the value to money thing went out the window, especially not when you, what was it, 17 special advisors and, you know, an aide de camp and Simon Coveney wanted to keep his car, all of this stuff. The optics are terrible when you're telling someone who was on less than the living wage that you have to take a cut in your COVID payment, but I want to keep a car that I'm not actually entitled to anymore. All of those things.
Well, I mean, the two examples you picked there, Tony, direct provision and housing. We've had no good news out of housing. In fact, all we've heard is the same old crap that Fine Gael were throwing out. And direct provision. Let me just read you a little something that came out about direct provision. This is an email that was sent. I can't remember who it was sent to, but it was first to clarify matters. Mosny is not a direct provision centre. Mosny is a centre of independent living in a village style, compromising 300 private homes. Now, there's your direct provision and there's your housing in one email. Mosny is direct provision. It's been direct provision all along, and now suddenly it's 300 houses. It's 300 houses. It's unbelievable.
I've been party to people who've tried to go to Mosny to help residents.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
And I can tell you, it's a black hole. It's an awful black hole.
They won't let you. You're not even allowed in past the gate, Tony. And the idea that it's not direct provision simply because you've had a change of government. And when you're distracted with drink driving and falling asleep on the job and aide de camps and drivers and Garda drivers and cars, this is the detail that's getting lost to the public. They're not changing anything. They're renaming things. We don't have direct provision. Now it's 300 independent living houses. Such nonsense. And there is no way to call them to account because they're refusing to allow the committees to work over the summer.
I find it worrying though that we haven't been able to adapt a lot of things to the world of COVID, you know, just via Zoom, via other mediums, because simply put, that has to be the case. I don't want to be as, you know, I was furious 2 days ago, absolutely livid. I was livid with the disdain that I felt for working class people. And I think I was probably more annoyed because I knew what was coming, because I've often been told, I've been accused of reverse snobbery, which I think is hilarious. You know, me, a white middle class man, reverse snobbery, you know, the world is made for me. It was made for people like me. And then I just had to put, listening to that, I was actually horrified, and you knew who was going to go to bat for Eamon Ryan. And I just think, again, can we get back from that for a second and just say, here's the question for you: in 3 weeks, what has the opposition done, Martin?
Yeah, good question, Tony. In 3 weeks, what has the opposition done? Now, look, I see, and I have seen, the Soc Dems did propose that motion, Tony, about low-paid workers and about
collective bargaining. Yeah.
So, you know, the opposition are working, and I've seen other stuff there. I mean, I've seen there's somebody working on a transport, it's Darren O'Rourke is trying to work on a transport link, the train link out this way, which we used to have before I was born, and they stopped. But it'd be great to have it back again, a train link going up this side of the country.
So parish pump.
Oh, I don't know. You're talking all the way up towards Donegal, which needs to be opened up. Absolutely needs to be opened up. So there are people working on transport. There are people working on issues of employment, collective bargaining. Aidan O'Riordan, I saw as well, was working on something as well. So they are working. The problem is that because you have only one voice coming out, and that's there's no scrutiny as such, and it's very difficult to have scrutiny without having committees there to do the scrutinizing.
I think though, okay, so you've pointed to a couple of things that they've done. I think they need to be a lot quicker. They need if you want to put forward an alternative government, you have to be the alternative government. And they're not, you know, you should be like, I spoke to Michael Taft about this and he put it great, you know, and he spoke about people cross party actually saying, you know, well, actually, who's the best housing spokesperson we have? Who's the best environmentalist we have? Who is the best? And put them forward as a de facto shadow cabinet. And they need to wake up to that very quickly. Will Sinn Féin play ball when the world is their oyster at the moment, because they get to almost understand that no matter what happens, they are seen in many regards as the government in waiting. Now they can't do it on their own, and they need to bring other parties with them. I would be critical of some of the stuff that I've seen. It's been a bit meh, right? But I want to see them come back with something more dynamic than just actually here's us objecting to everything. They need to actually they can object all the time, but they need to be putting forward.
Well, I think if we see this trend on the numbers going, we're all going to have lots of time to sit down and bloody well think about putting something together. And I don't think I think. There is no way to say that a program for government can survive a second wave. It can't. It means it's a whole new ball game. It was a whole new ball game the first time around. And, you know, me personally, I feel that they should never have been putting together a government. They should have taken the opportunity, put it back to the people, get the government we want, and just let it run. But it is the way it is. Mm. There has to be acknowledgement that a program for government cannot survive a second lockdown. There needs to be a complete rethink then. If you're going to come back out of a second lockdown, we're in stage three of open up, and stage three has increased the numbers. And we're at a point where the advice we're getting is, well, we're not going to move to stage four. But if the bleeding is coming from stage three, the obvious thing to do is step back to stage two to stop the hemorrhaging. You know, that's what you do.
Just before we started recording, I told you, speaking to a friend of mine in Barcelona who told me that they're out for dinner because they think it might be the last time they get out for dinner in a little while, because they feel that the next lockdown will be... it won't be called the same thing. It'll be, you know, it won't be as severe. It will be a lot less, you know, restricted to your home. But it was pretty severe in Barcelona insofar as, you know, you didn't have the freedoms that we had in Ireland. Ireland has some natural advantages, Martin. It has.
Look, we have the one big end. We keep saying it. We're an island, we're an island, we're an island. Yeah. We could do it for foot and mouth. And we absolutely, if you want to open schools safely, if you want to open pubs safely, if you want to open up everything safely, you must eliminate the disease first. And as an island, we have that advantage, and we just do.
Yeah, but eliminating the disease that's all over the world, I don't know. I don't know, but I just think...
There's no right way. And no. Like, if you think New Zealand is best in school... And if we call New Zealand best in school and look towards the example that everything they did early. Mm. Everything we did, people were screaming for it before it happened. That goes for both lockdown and open up. I'm not saying it's just all one way. People were screaming for lockdown, and then people were very quickly screaming for open up. But the people who were screaming for open up are much more your vested interests. Well,
concerns me.
Well, when you see the way it has opened up, it's literally a list of vested interests.
Can we end this little conversation of ours with one good thing now? What did you make of the Poor Vintners Association saying, look, we need to end house parties by stopping the sale of alcohol?
yeah, I know, yeah.
Wasn't that the very definition of the kid who went, he was losing 3-0 and he goes, well, it's my football, I'm taking it, I'm going home.
I see Ben Dunn has said that his gyms will remain closed until there is no risk. Okay. And somebody said to me, yeah, but he's keeping the subscriptions. Yeah, okay, I see that too. And I'm not saying that's right, but I'm saying there's a man who made a decision who could be making more money, but he made a decision, and it's a pleasant surprise to see a businessman who is saying, look, I prefer my business to survive in the long term than to see my customers hurt. I think it's refreshing. I know an awful lot of small businesses are not in that position. and they're not. This is a killer blow for them. And a second lockdown is the coup de grace. It's just going to finish them off.
I go back to there are solutions, and the state can step into this. We have at least 2 years whereby we will be able to avail of the funds. And by the way, if we're hoping to do some stuff on what's happening in the EU at the moment. Next week, I've got a couple of good guests lined up, and hopefully they'll be able to give us a sense of what these bailout bonds or these corona bonds. And I know the Dutch are still agitating, saying they don't want to do it. But look, we'll just go with it as we can. But the last thing is basically, Martin, the money is there. If they were to turn around and say, we'll continue to pump it in and we'll deal with it in 3 years' time or 5 years' time or 10 years' time, that's the only way you deal with this, because
absolutely. And then wrap the debt up and kick it 100 years down the road. You know, yeah. That's how you do it. Okay, so I'm just going to give a little outlook for the week to come. The public services card is going to come up in the courts very shortly. It's well worth keeping an eye on. They have to get ready for recess next week. Now, whatever that means, it means that we're going to be in an information blackout right across the summer. But thankfully, the tortoise shack will be here to pick and to prod and to say, well, look, this shouldn't be happening. This should be happening. Whether the government can stay closed down until September, I really don't think so. Manny has slipped betwixt cup and lip, Tony. You know, I don't think so.
Look, thanks for joining us, guys. Thanks, Fred, for your input. Really appreciate it. Look, we couldn't do it without you guys. It's patreon.com/tortoiseshack. Look, feel free, drop us a DM, drop me a message, send me whatever feedback you want. We're happy enough to take questions from you guys, because it doesn't happen without your support. It really, really doesn't. Talk to y'all soon. Take care.